Well, gosh, almost halfway through May already. My birthday approaching rapidly. Birthday count, in case you're interested, is 17 days. So we'll address that probably in a upcoming show. Adam Lepp here with the second of two shows that I perform every Tuesday here on The Talking Place. It's called Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. But we often are joined by the official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ronald Fineman from Florida. And we call the show, when he's on, a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam. Let's see if I properly, of course, I think I heard him giggling in the background, so more than likely I have properly connected the proper cables, soldered the correct wires. Well, not really have to solder, but at least I can pretend to do something so mechanically advanced. And of course, cross my fingers, and as they tend to do on Facebook, offered thoughts and prayers for a great radio show. Dr. Ron Fineman, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Thank you so much again, Adam, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Do you think thoughts and prayers, I know we've talked about that online, do you think it's used just a teeny tiny bit too often to the point where it doesn't really mean anything anymore?
Exactly. I'm annoyed by it because I think it's phony. I think most people who say thoughts and prayers don't give thoughts and prayers. They just say it.
It seems like you're almost obligated, whether or not you believe it, religiously or philosophically, just offer thoughts and prayers because people sometimes just arbitrarily say, and I don't want to make a joke of this because it's not something to joke about, but they say, well, my grandma's in the hospital, can you please offer thoughts and prayers? But it's like they want thoughts and prayers from people who don't even know them, don't even know what grandma's yes. in the hospital for. The whole thing is like, well, just offer thoughts and prayers. Well, I'd like to kind of personalize it because does it really mean anything?
I agree with you.
Even if it's not someone you know. I mean, I don't know my friends and business associates' grandparents, but I would certainly want to wish for their recovery if they did fall ill or were injured. And to personalize something makes it more worthwhile. So, we don't want to joke about this, but understand it's been trivialized just a teeny tiny bit too much. Thought I would offer that and, never quite know what we're going to talk about on this show, and that's why it's always a good idea to listen. Now, Dr. Fineman is the author of a couple books, most recently one about presidential assassinations. It's out in paperback. It's quite popular. An excellent piece of reading material, which I very much encourage you to acquire. And he does do book signings sometimes in the South Florida area. So if you are in that area, feel free to attend the book signing and let him know that yours truly, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, I have many monikers around here, sent you to discuss in person with the author of that fine publication. Of course, as the official WWGH presidentologist, we often discuss presidential history, past candidates and future candidates. And very troubling, Ron, John McCain. Again, whether or not you agree with his politics, there's no question the guy is a war hero and a very good man. Someone who tells it like it is and understands he has like shortcomings like all members of all human beings, but his knowledge and his ability to be a role model, and even if he's not, didn't win the election, obviously, he's still someone we think of as a leader and a longtime member of Congress. There have been some very troubling things said against John McCain recently, Ron. We discussed about him not wanting Donald Trump to be at his funeral, instead wanting his presidential rival, Barack Obama, to be there and maybe make the eulogy. But now people are saying
and also George W. Bush to do a eulogy as well.
People are saying some very mean things about him. Why don't you tell our listeners more about that? And what's your impression? Do you kind of get sick to your stomach hearing about this stuff?
Yes, I think Kelly Sadler, who I'd never heard of before, who's on the White House staff, made the statement that it doesn't matter about McCain, he's dying anyway, And that's a terrible thing to say. It's a terrible thing. And she will not apologize. Supposedly, she apologized to McCain's daughter on the phone, but said she would do so publicly, and she has not done it yet. But meanwhile, the press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is more upset about the leak about it and is not willing to address the issue herself about what kind of a comment is that to make. And, of course, Donald Trump obviously has never said he's sorry or ever felt regret about anything he has or anybody around him has done or said. So it just adds to the disgrace, I think, of the Trump presidency. And personally, I think the fact that she has not apologized, I think she should be fired. That's what I would think, because I think it's totally unacceptable for somebody to do something like that, to say something like that in an official position.
Very much so. We had Kathy Griffin, who suffered a major job
setback. Look what happened to Kathy Griffin for quite a while. She was eviscerated. And this woman somehow, yes, there's criticism outside now, but somehow there's no reaction from the White House while there was a terrible reaction against Kathy Griffin. It's just a double standard that anything around Donald Trump, even his sex life, is different than anybody else. And everybody else gets into real trouble and gets enforced out, like the Attorney General of New York State, Eric Schneiderman. But Donald Trump somehow survives it all, at least up to this point.
I mean, I would say both acts were inexcusable. I support the firing or at least the censure, that might be a better way to say it, of Kathy Griffin. But this particular John McCain incident, I would say that it's worse. And to me, it's almost treasonous. Again, love him or hate him, John McCain is a war hero. I don't think too many people know what it's like being a POW. And he is a good man. You know, I agree with most of what he has to say, certainly not everything. And as we talked about it before, he very well might have won the election if he made a better choice for VP, but hindsight is 20/20, as they say. Bottom line is
the theory was Joe Lieberman, the senator from Connecticut, the Democrat, would have been added to the ticket, and it might have swung enough votes in key states, it is thought, but hard to prove, that he might have defeated Barack Obama. And I wanted to mention also something I don't know if you're aware of, that get this, John McCain's mother is still alive. She's 106. Can you believe this?
I didn't know that, John. Ron. Ron.
He's 81. Can you imagine an 81-year-old man having his mother still?
Yeah, I honestly did not know that. Now, I know Lillian Carter, of course, she was alive for a while, but then Jimmy Carter became president at a relatively young age, and John McCain, yes, did not know that his mother was over 100 and still living. You never quite know.
And she's still able to focus. She still is, it's not as if she's in she's in a trance or anything. She's doing fine. She's got a big mouth, Roberta McCain, and she speaks her mind still.
Well, if you're 106 years old, you can say what you want to say, as far as I'm concerned. And
that's right. And she was 106 in February, so she's actually a few months past 106. I just think it's hysterical because I'd forgotten about her for a while. A few years ago, I remembered she was around, and then she had 100. And then I sort of forgot, and then I came across it somewhere. My God, she's 106.
Yeah, that would probably be a record for the longest-lived family member of someone who it was president or ran for president. I can't think of anybody even close.
Yes. Even older than Queen Elizabeth's mother, who was 102,
Right. So quite incredible. And I'm sure,
yes, it is.
And I'm sure she was none too happy to hear these things said against her son. And again, it's inexcusable. The man is a war hero, and again, love him or hate him, any politician is controversial, even the ones that I support. But those kind of things need to have the sayer of those things reprimanded. And we'll just kind of leave it at that. And I do kind of wonder about Kathy Griffin versus this talk about John McCain. Well, he's going to die anyway. And technically, we're all going to die anyway, because life is finite.
Yes. Actually, the joke is you see these supermarket tabloids, and they say Queen Elizabeth has is dying, or Bill Clinton is dying. Everybody's dying, if you go by that term, is dying. So we're all closer today than we were yesterday.
Yeah, it's just the context of how you say it. And that was none too cool. Now, last time we talked, Ron, it was Election Day. Here in the Buckeye State, election time has ended, and unlike the presidential election, the gubernatorial election in Ohio didn't really have any surprises. The expected winners were victorious. again, as opposed, you know, but ironically, as opposed to the presidential election, which did surprise a few people. Anyway, my choice, Mr. Cordray, did win over Kucinich and other Democratic contenders. And veteran politician, current Attorney General Mike DeWine, he won for the Republicans. Again, Ron, you don't hear as much about these candidates every day as I do, but what happens in Ohio, just like in Florida, those are two states. That's what we have in common. The weather might be different, but both states have a large impact on the rest of the country. And as the official presidentologist, I'm sure you're well aware of Mr. Cordray and Mr. DeWine. Any impressions? And, you know, I noticed I commented somewhat jokingly, you know, I always joke around more than a few times, that unlike the presidential election, I guess we can say that we never should take any election for granted. Just when you think you know who's going to win, it might throw you a curve.
You're right. Well, I would say Richard Cordray, I definitely would prefer to win the election. And I think, honestly, nobody's thinking about this, but I think if he becomes governor of Ohio, and believe it or not, with a wide open race in the Democratic Party, who could say a governor who's been in office a year and a half, like Woodrow Wilson, who goes on to be the nominee and wins, who could say Richard Cordray, and, you know, might not, I'm not saying he will, but he could, in theory, decide to run for president, announce his candidacy. I don't know if he would necessarily have much of a chance, but being Ohio governor really helps, and I think the outgoing governor, Kasich, certainly will start to be really talked about as a potential Republican challenger to Donald Trump or Mike Pence. And also Sherrod Brown, who could have been picked but wasn't by Hillary Clinton, could announce, you know, once his Senate race is over, and indeed end up, you know, possibly running for president in 2020 as well. So Ohio could be a center of at least two, if not three, people that could be in the presidential race.
Certainly would seem that living in the Buckeye State and being exposed to all this political stuff will keep us at the forefront. And I agree. Cordray, I think he'd be a good president. He's not too far to the left. Again, I talk about he's a Jeopardy champion. You know, I always admire somebody with high intellect. Yes. And I'll take U.S. presidential candidates for 1,000, Alex, because I think he might very well run. He did have a cabinet position, or I guess a staff position, under President Obama. Did you follow him much when he worked
for the Financial Protection Bureau? Yes.
Right. When he worked for the Obama administration, Ron, did you follow him too much? I mean, is your impression, you know, a good one that he is a smart man with, I mean, for a politician, good ethics? No politician has perfect ethics, but I think he's at least one of the more ethical people in politics.
Well, I don't know anything that's not ethical about him, let's say. As far as I know, he's fine. He seems like an excellent person. Did a great job in, you know, with that new agency, which is now being gutted, or they're trying to gut it under Trump. And it's a disgrace, because that's a very important agency that has done good work under Cordray and should be continued. But it looks like it's on his death now in the next couple of years, in budgeting purposes anyway.
Now, yesterday, Monday, Scott Spears, my co-manager here at the station, I call him the interviewer to the stars, didn't disappoint. He had on Ted Strickland, a former governor, Democrat from Ohio, who's still around. He's been on the station a few times, live in the studio. Also, Mary Ellen Withrow, a native of the Marion area. She lives in the area. Treasurer, dollar bill signer under Mr. Clinton. She was also on the air with Scott, so he does speak to these candidates, as well as people that are well-known here and pretty much all over. We've kind of gone back and forth a bit, at least since I've lived here, between Democrat and Republican governors. And that, I guess that kind of makes Ohio unique, Ron, as many states tend to be one way or the other, or kind of like California, they've done a bit of a 180. And we'll talk about one of your blog posts about that in a little bit. But with the governors kind of going back and forth, we have a kind of middle-of-the-road Republican currently. Could that mean that it's time now for a middle-of-the-road Democrat, meaning Cordray would win in November? Or do you think DeWine has a pretty good chance?
Well, DeWine was also in the U.S. Senate, so I don't know. I would hope that Cordray would have the edge. I'm not really sure about the balance as far as the registered voters in Ohio. Are you aware of the balance of how many are registered Republican,
Ohio,
Democratic, and independent? Because I'm not really aware, but I would hope
it kind of depends where in Ohio. suburban Cincinnati is known as being very Republican. Columbus City is, I would say, more Democrat and getting more so. Cleveland is traditionally Democratic. Southeastern Ohio, more Republican. And Northwestern Ohio, probably split half and half, depending upon what city that you might be in. But in terms of Columbus and Cincinnati, the cities that I know best, the suburbs are certainly far to the right of the city.
And again, what about Cleveland, the rural part of Ohio? That's the crucial area always with every state. We always forget that. I was just reading an article about California, about Bakersfield, where Kevin McCarthy, the possible future Republican leader, maybe Speaker of the House, is from, and Pelosi from San Francisco, and how different Bakersfield is from San Francisco. So I'm sure the rural parts of Ohio are very different from Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Toledo, etc. Do you have any idea about that? Because I don't know. Right. I imagine it'd be more Republican in those areas.
Right. The rural areas in the Appalachian part is traditionally more Republican, but it does depend. Athens, home of Ohio University, which is going to be fairly to the left, that would be certainly more Democrat-leaning. So it depends upon who's voting. If people in Marietta and Cambridge, Pomeroy, if they get out and vote. Again, they aren't overly highly populated areas, but they do have a voice. Again, as we talked about, every vote counts, and it's often based upon who is voting. And that will have a great effect back and forth with exactly which way the state is going to swing. And a good example.
May I say that Mike Warren was in the Senate. He never seemed to be very, I'm not saying everybody is, he's not very charismatic or very dramatic or exciting a candidate. I'm not really sure about Cordray. I haven't heard him speak that much, but I would hope he's not as uncharismatic as Mike DeWine is.
Yeah, DeWine's not the most interesting guy out there, but he certainly is experienced. And I would say, in general, he is too socially conservative for me, but I do admire his staying power. He's been in politics as long as I can remember. He's had many different offices. And talk about Cordray. Well, he's been on national TV when he was on Jeopardy. So, you like the geekiness of the guy. He's from Grove City, Ohio, which is where I lived many years ago. It's a good town. So we'll see. My support certainly will stay with Cordray, but I'm interested in characters, and of course they are characters, but what the candidates have to say about each other and hearing some debates. That's all. Want to make an informed decision. Don't necessarily count any candidate out. So you've taken a look at all the different issues. But as I mentioned, with respect to the Trump election, I figured Ohio would go toward Trump, but I didn't think it would go as resoundingly as it did. And once Ohio was overwhelmingly in favor of Trump, and Trump won Pennsylvania and some other surprise states, I knew the election was pretty much over. So bottom line is, your vote does count. And Ohio, again, like many states, is interesting in that depends exactly where you are in terms of what the trends are. Cincinnati, again, traditionally more conservative, but the city part, I mean, there are two somewhat large universities there. Many of those areas will tend to the left. But the suburbs and the more suburban parts of the city, Anderson Township, for example, will certainly heavily trend Republican. Bottom line is, wherever you are, do vote. Your vote does count. Bring it back to the Bush election, where Florida was decided by just a few hundred votes. And that's not
537 votes. Yes, not unbelievable. Not, I wanted to mention, I was looking up about both DeWine and Cordray. DeWine is now the Attorney General of Ohio, and Cordray was the earlier Attorney General of Ohio. So that's interesting. They both held that position, and I guess there should be a study done by the media of what their record was as Attorney General for 8 years in each case, because I think that's significant to bring up. And also, Cordray is 59 and DeWine is 71. I don't know if that makes a difference, but he is younger by 12 years, Cordray. So I think that would be a positive for sure.
Interesting about Cordray as a, hate to say it, a fellow youthful-looking person. It is, I don't want to mention the decade, but let's say the Cordray is just a few years older than I am. He looks pretty youthful. And I remember when he was running, I forget what office it was, because he's run for so many different offices, but at this, when he was on these TV ads, he was probably in his mid to late 30s and looked closer to 20s. He would talk about the biggest problem that he had was when he and his wife go out, that they check his ID. And it was kind of a joke because he did look. He still looks very youthful.
When I was past 21, they wanted to know how old I was when it was doing the media.
Again, he's run for, and I think this was when he was running for the House. But yeah, he was at that time, mid to late 30s. He looked probably 10 years younger. So it was kind of interesting. And though the candidates differ in age by 12, I would say that DeWine looks like he could possibly be Cordray's grandpa. And we'll leave it at that. But again, it's...
Oh, there's 12 years difference in actual fact, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but not a... we talked about Pence also, who probably is not aging too well either.
I don't think working for Donald Trump, you would not be aging. He's an impossible person to work for.
Right. Now, Barack Obama's like 57, 58. He's not much younger at all than Pence. Look at the difference. I would say...
Yes.
I would say Pence looks like he could have 25 years on Obama. So,
wanted to point out that the study done at the health of all the presidents, and at least this study said that, and get this, that Obama is apparently in office the second healthiest of all presidents. The only one more healthy, which surprised me, is an Ohioan. Rutherford B. Hayes was rated number one in health. Imagine that.
Hayes was a bit on the chubby side, wasn't he?
No, not Hayes. He's the one that had the beard. He's the one who actually won election, although he lost a popular vote in 1876 to Samuel Tilden in that famous compromise of 1877. So he's, I would call, the George W. Bush of 1876.
Uh-huh. Well, I figured you would know that. So maybe the occasional smoking that he was sneaking around on his wife, maybe that helped Obama. Who knows? It maybe was a bit of a stress reliever. Because that was, I guess, yes. One of the interesting things about Obama is, did he actually quit smoking? And did Michelle actually tell him that if he were to become president, he would have to quit? Because apparently they don't allow smoking in the White House. So I guess we'll never really know. But who knows? Just a little factoid for your
entertainment. There's always things we never know about anyone. It takes a long time to, and the more you learn, the more you know that you don't know about a president. There's so much.
Yep.
You know?
Just when you think you got it figured out. But again, didn't Dr. Ronnie Jackson and Donald Trump himself say that he was the healthiest president of all time?
Well, sorry to say, that was not true.
So, don't believe everything you hear.
Good idea.
You are tuned to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Again, always a few jokes and wisecracks. Because don't want to take yourself too seriously. Ron, we talked, I probably talked, I guess you listened, kind of like E.F. Hutton. Anyway, about some states, California, for example, our most populous state, that is, and also the one, of course, with the most electoral votes, one that had an impact on the last presidential election. Anyway, that it has gone from Republican to Democrat in about a generation of time. And one of the reasons you're postulating is due to a crackdown on immigration by former Governor Pete Wilson. You wrote about that recently in your
book. Yes, and that's why there are very few, in fact, most statewide races, because they have a system in California, the top two candidates in primaries run off against each other in the fall. So we may have, no Republican nominee for the Senate and maybe no Republican nominee for governor. Instead, two Democrats in each case running for, and of course, the number of seats in the House, overwhelmingly Democratic in the House of Representatives. So it has become very hard for the Republican Party to survive statewide in the case of California.
Now, with that being our most populous state, and a state that, whether or not it's serious, is talking about seceding, becoming its own country, has also been talk about dividing it into North and South California, because as we've talked about, most of California is rural desert. It isn't urban like San Francisco, L.A., or San Diego, or Sacramento, which, like Columbus, is a capital city that's bigger than people think it is, and most of it is just rural desert. And Ohio has rural parts, but it's not as substantial as California. But again, California certainly has more area. But bottom line is the fact that California is becoming more Democratic. What kind of effect does that have? Is that going to affect the ability of any Republican presidential candidate to win?
Well, it didn't stop, George W. Bush, obviously, because of what happened in Florida. A lot depends on the states that have large Latino populations that are projected to be turning blue in the next decade, meaning Texas, and also Georgia and Florida and North Carolina, they all really do go that direction, and the Republican Party does not start to appeal to Hispanics, whether they're from Mexico or anywhere else, or Puerto Rican or Colombian or Dominican or whatever, then I think there could be a lock in the future. Not yet, but a lock in the future for Democrats. It's really a losing proposition for Trump to be so much working against Hispanics and other immigrants, you know, even the ones who are legal, where there's so much discrimination being promoted. Because in the long run, it's going to change the course of politics, I think, in the next 10 years or so. And that's been projected. Not yet, but it will by 2024 and 2028 at the rate things are developing. Just as in California, now there are more people who are Hispanic than there are white Anglos.
It seems hard to believe that Texas, which is always thought of as a Republican state, could possibly go Democratic. I mean, California, I can understand, and Texas is growing also. Austin, another example of a capital city, like Columbus, with a big college in it, that is bigger than people think it is and is continuing to grow.
Austin's a great city. I've been there. It's wonderful, yeah.
But Dallas
but, you
and
know,
Houston...
Texas, Houston Democratic until the Civil Rights Act of 64 under Lyndon Johnson. Then it started to go to the Republicans. But as the Hispanic population grows, even though they're trying to make it harder for them to register to vote and make all kinds of barriers, but over time, it is starting to transform Texas, just not yet. But there is concern in the part of the Republicans that the next decade, like 10 years from now for sure, there will be a very different Texas politically than it is now. And the same with Florida and the same with North Carolina and Georgia as well.
I would think that if Texas, California, and Florida heavily swing Democratic, New York is already Democratic, I don't see how any Republican could possibly become president.
Well, it's going to be very hard, you know. As long as people are able to vote and they get out there and vote, of course, a lot depends on voting patterns, you know, people going out and voting. But yes, those are the big four states, and if you can have three of them, you know, even figuring Florida is more middle of the road, where it's partly red and partly blue and may not change in the northern part. But in Texas, if there's a big swing in the next 10 years as projected, I don't think it's possible really anytime soon, unless there's a major change in Republican, propaganda and what they promote and what they believe in. They got to get away from Donald Trump, and that's the thing. Donald Trump is harming the party. He really is in the long run, even if in the short run they're doing all right.
Now, we'd agree, Ron, that it's good to have contested races. I mean, I know you're a Democrat.
Yes.
I'm an independent, but we do look at the candidate. I mean, there are Republicans that you like, and there are Democrats that you don't
yes.
like. And it's good to have a system where people do have debates, have a healthy argument about who's the best candidate. And if Donald Trump is affecting the Republican Party in a bad way, that is kind of contrary to the great American system that we know and love. And that certainly could have some lingering after effects.
I think Trump will have a lot of everlasting effects beyond his time in office. It's very clear already that he's done a great amount of harm to our whole political system. And the question is, when is it going to end? But then we have the issue of Mike Pence. And as I just published on Sunday in History News Network about Mike Pence, and it's going viral already. I see 431 shares of it on History News Network. Mike Pence is no Jerry Ford. And obviously, it's getting a lot of people noticing and sharing.
Yeah, I would say that Mike Pence and Jerry Ford, that's not really a very good comparison. I don't see Mike Pence being I don't see Mike Pence being a star football player either, like Gerald Ford was.
I think he might have played sports, but I don't think he played football in college.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah, and I just couldn't see Mike Pence smoking a pipe either, like Gerald Ford did. As we talked about earlier, Gerald Ford is, as far as I know, our most recent pipe smoking president. Just a little factoid for you.
I think you're right, actually, now that you're saying that. I believe that's true, as far as we know in public. Again, we don't know in private, but I think you are correct on that, yes.
And I'll end this piece by saying something I said before, but it's so funny, it's worth saying. Of course, Clinton used cigars, but didn't necessarily smoke them, and we'll leave it at that. You wrote on your blog last week about 15 presidents who, as my mama always said, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And many presidents, including the current one, previously ran unsuccessful campaigns. We've talked about, Ron, how Donald Trump didn't always have the political leanings that he has now, and also the fact that due to advances in technology, when he first thought of becoming president, which was back in 2000, the infamous 2000 election, we didn't have Twitter. He wasn't able to tweet things, so he conducted himself in a different way. He competed in 2000 for the Reform Party nomination, but withdrew before Pat Buchanan won that party's nomination. And of course, 16 years ago, he won the Republican primary and became president and continues to sit in the Oval Office. More recently, many people my age or older, Ronald Reagan competed for the Republican nomination twice, losing to, of course, Tricky Dicky and Mr. Ford, but then won the presidency in 1980 and 1984. So there's someone who decided that he was on his third strike, but that time he hit a home run and won against Mr. Carter and won re-election. As I recall, the re-election was a landslide in 1984.
Talked against about your favorite guy, Walter Mondale, right?
Yeah, one of my favorites for sure. Of course, another one, yeah, Mr. Nixon, Tricky Dicky, we call him. He lost to JFK in 1960, but won in 68, and he probably regrets it, but he also won in 1972. We know what happened, but we will discuss that probably sometime in the future. Millard Fillmore, he's one that talked about earlier. I wrote a report on him in school once because most people have never even heard of the guy, and he has kind of a funny name.
Yes. From Buffalo, New York. Yeah, he and Grover Cleveland, the two Buffalo, New York residents.
He ran on the American Party, known as the Know Nothing Party, in 1856. But not surprisingly, since he knew nothing, he finished behind a president who, interestingly, is considered one of our worst presidents. Our only bachelor president, James Buchanan, won. And he's considered pretty much a presidential disaster. But he won against the Know Nothing Party. But previously, Fillmore served as president after the passing of Zachary Taylor. Also, we have from way back, this was from before John McCain's mother was born. Again, she's been around quite a while, but not quite this long. Thomas Jefferson lost the presidential election of 1796 to John Adams, but then won in 1804. And William Henry Harrison, he served like 32 days in president, right? Because he developed
31 days,
a serious illness during his inauguration. I guess he didn't wear a coat or something and didn't have quite the medical advancements we have in 2018. He lost to Martin Van Buren in 1836, but then won in 1840. Of course, let's turn the clock up to 2018 and future elections. Do you think that Mrs. Clinton, who has been unsuccessful essentially twice in a primary and in a general election, do you think that she has one more try in her? Now, remember, Reagan tried the third time, and the third time was the charm. Do you think we'll have the same fate for Mrs. Clinton?
Scott Sears has brought this up, as you know, in discussions with me earlier and when I've been on his program. I really think more than ever, no way will she do it. You know, I think she's had it. I just don't see it happening. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know if she could unite the Democratic Party as its candidate. She could run. I mean, obviously anybody could announce. You and I could announce even. But I don't think she would end up as a nominee because I think it would be seen as a losing ticket. I think we need someone who has not already lost. Losing. I know people have lost 15 times, but in the modern era and with her publicity as First Lady, I think a lot of people are just sick and tired of her. And even many who voted for her, some of them unwillingly, but didn't want to vote for Trump. You know, so she did win more votes. But I don't really believe she will run again, and I don't think she'll be the nominee in any case. However, history tells us whenever we say something like I just said, we get surprised all the time, so who knows?
But what about Reagan losing twice and then winning and becoming arguably, in our lifetime, the most popular president, certainly the most popular Republican president, someone who's a bit of a folk hero? Now, of course, he was an excellent actor. That's part of it. But you know, I think he has folk hero status, whether or not you like the guy. And we kind of agree on Reagan. We don't agree with a lot of his policies, but we think he's a good man. He had a great sense of humor. He was a good leader. He had good ethics, and his foreign policy.
Let me say on Reagan, At first, it was personality, I think, for the average person, even if you didn't agree with him, as I did not agree with him, I liked him. A lot of people never have liked Hillary Clinton, I think partly because it's her being a woman, and partly just maybe her and her husband with the controversies around her husband. And Reagan was out of office 6 years when he got elected. He had been governor, and then he had run out of office in 76 to challenge Ford, came close to defeating him, and gained a lot of support, even though he didn't win the nomination. So he was actually out 6 years where Hillary Clinton was not, well, she was only out a little bit as Secretary of State, but she was in that controversial position as well as having been a senator and being the first lady and backing her husband. So I think there's more troubles in quotes with her as far as in people's minds than with Reagan's background.
So we're saying that trying to compare Reagan to Clinton, although it may seem logical initially, is kind of comparing apples to oranges. There are some differences.
I think so, yeah. But, you know, who knows? Maybe 2 years from now we'll say, oh, my gosh, I'm wrong, and she's running, and she's the nominee, and maybe she'll win. I mean, anything is possible in America. We've learned that.
And we do tend to think that John Kasich may have aspirations for Washington, D.C.,
yes,
at least in the Oval Office. And he's someone who's run multiple times in the Republican primary. So, again, we shall see. Just when you think you figured it out, a curve is thrown. That's kind of what makes it so fun talking about politics, as we do here pretty much every day.
Yeah, interject here, by the way, about Mike Pence in college? I don't think he played football, but get this. Who was his roommate at Hanover College in Indiana? Woody Harrelson, the actor.
Well,
that's something.
That certainly is interesting. Another one of the fine and fabulous factoids that we find.
It's a very interesting thing to have a famous actor, being a friend of his. And they said that he was too straight-laced, Mike Pence. He wouldn't tell lies to cover up for his fraternity brothers. And they were annoyed at him at the time because apparently they did some kind of a stunt and he confessed it all to the dean and they didn't want him to.
Wasn't that ironic? In college, he was thought of as being too honest, but now he's a politician.
Yes.
Talk about the ironies that you see in politics, which are certainly interesting to say the least. Of course, like any show with Adam and the Professor, time flies. We only have a few minutes left, so I'll talk fast and we'll discuss Ron's blog from yesterday, Monday the 14th. Again, Ron is a Democrat. I'm an independent. But he does mention that a fact often not acknowledged is that the three longest economic expansions in American history took place under Democratic presidents, the longest being under President Clinton.
Yeah.
And I would tend to agree, but again, my generation, I spent a large amount of my young adulthood under President Clinton, and the economy was pretty good. Of course, many times a president is a victim of or benefactor of circumstance, so we can't give Clinton all the credit, but I think he had a few things to do with it. Is there a reason for that? Was Clinton just a benefactor of a good economy, or did he really kind of turn things around?
I think that was a lot to do with the economy at the time, the tech economy. I think whoever was president probably would have been able to accomplish the same thing, because a lot of what happens economically is not in the hands of the president, only a certain amount of control he has. But it is ironic that the Clinton expansion was the longest, and the second longest now is the expansion since 2009, when Obama came in and we were at the low point with the Great Recession, and it's now continued for the second longest time, just surpassing the John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and very early Nixon 1960s, which was mostly, again, Democratic. So the fact is the Democrats, except for brief periods of each case, of each of these three, time periods, has been the one that has been presiding over it. Nine of the last 10 recessions since 1953 have been under Republican presidents.
Now, you've postulated in that blog post that Donald Trump, who does like to brag just a little bit, talks about how the economy is great, and in many ways it is, but you're saying that he inherited that from his predecessor.
Now, and Obama inherited a horrible recession, the Great Recession, and really turned around onto him, and actually faster than it did under FDR in the 30s, after Herbert Hoover, actually did a better recovery than FDR did in the New Deal years.
Is there a reason why, or is it just luck, or is there something going on where you feel that in the last 80 years or so that Democratic presidents do served during a time of economic recovery?
I think it's partly luck and partly what their agenda is economically. I think if they're out to try to improve the condition of the middle class and the working class, and not only the wealthy, and Republicans generally move to help the wealthy, as with the recent tax cut that almost completely benefited the wealthy, and did not really help the middle class or the working class very much at all. So it's partly luck and partly the agenda, I think.
So, as my mama said, in celebrating my deceased mom, a couple days after Mother's Day, she taught me a lot of truisms, and again, one was that, two of them, it's not what you know, it's who you know, but also it's good to be in the right place at the right time. And so many things are in the equation. We're not giving, and by no means, as much as I like Clinton, not giving him credit for a great economy, but he did have something to do with it. Well, we'll close with this question, Ron, and you'll like this question. As you probably noticed, gas prices are in a general upward trend. They are higher in the summer due to the additives and the way it's formulated, but it looks like they are trending upward. They're in the around 270, 280 here in the Buckeye State, and they were as low as $1.50 not long ago. Is that something having to do with the goings-on in the Middle East with Trump? And if I were to ask Donald Trump...
Well, the issue of breaking the agreement with Iran, I think when it was working, clearly, and many intelligence and foreign policy experts have said that, it's not just Democrats saying that, I think is a mistake, and I think it's going to affect the future. I think it definitely will. And the whole Middle East cauldron that now is worse because of the troubles going on in the Palestinian territories. I just don't think that the whole situation is very good. Don't forget Venezuela is also in crisis, so that also affects the oil market as well as Iran. So I think if the prices do go up, hopefully not too much, but if they do go up a lot, I think that will harm Donald Trump's reputation.
Yeah,
although maybe not with his base, I don't know, but certainly I think with a lot of Americans, they're going to be very irritated if the prices go up dramatically. Hopefully they will not.
I mean, gas prices affect everybody, but in some professions, trucking industry, for example, which is very important in this country, to put it mildly, gas prices have a big effect. If I were to be talking to Donald Trump right now, Ron, and I said, well, Donald, what do you think about the gas prices? What can we do to solve the problem? Do you think he'd have an answer for me?
He would say it's Obama's fault.
So he would blame it on Barack. It sounds like a song lyric.
Maybe he wouldn't. I'm joking, but that's what he always seems to be saying. Going to blame it on Hillary, crooked Hillary. I mean, that's what I'm not saying he will say that, but that's what his answer seems to be: blame the past rather than take responsibility. Never say you're sorry. Never say you're wrong, and that includes this whole issue with this Kelly Sadler with John McCain. Bless his heart. I hope he does survive beyond May 22nd when his book comes out officially. And I hope he goes on for a few more years like Jimmy Carter, who also has had cancer. So I'm praying that he will recover enough that he can continue in office and have a few more years. And it would be ironic if his 106-year-old mother outlived him. Wouldn't that be wild?
That would certainly be interesting. Quite commendable. 106 years old. I did not know she was alive, but, you know, you learn something new every day, which, again, my mother also used to tell me, and it's very, very, very true. So bottom
just
line
like
is,
Woody Harrelson being Mike Pence's roommate at Hanover College in Indiana.
As we wrap up today's show and more brain-stimulating discussions, you don't think Donald Trump would have an answer for me if I asked him about gas prices?
I think he probably would say to you, call me Mr. President, not Donald.
But he... Might he say that his golf cart runs on electricity, and so he really wouldn't care because all he's got to do is plug it in?
Probably, yes. Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. And in case we do get the Donald, or whatever we want to refer to him as, on the show, that's the first thing I'm going to ask him. Because, you know, I like getting all these speedy points at Speedway, but my wallet does suffer when the credit card bills come in.
yes.
Dr. Ron Feinman, thank you so much for being on the show again today. You've been a great friend to the radio station. on with me and
Thanks,
Scott.
I had a great time again.
57 times or something like that, and it's greatly appreciated. Always good, stimulating discussion. Tell us very quickly, remind our listeners how to get in touch with you and how to email you and contact you about your blog and about your book.
Okay, well, of course, I'm on Facebook under my name, Ronald Fineman, under the Progressive Professor, and also under Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, which is, of course, my book title. The book can be purchased from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or from Roman Littlefield. And my Twitter name is Politist, P-O-L-I-T-H-I-S-T, like politics, 5 letters, history, 4 letters, P-O-L-I-T-H-I-S-T. And I welcome people writing to me and commenting, whatever. I really appreciate it.
And thanks again, Ron, for taking time out to be on the show with me on this fine Tuesday morning here in the Buckeye State. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much again.